Hello and welcome back to the adventures of Lola Badiola. Before we start, let me just point out there was an error in last week's class. In the fizz buzz counting exercise when we were practicing the pronunciation of the voiced S, I should have said 17 instead of buzz. I apologize if this caused any confusion, and I would like to thank the very attentive listeners for drawing my attention to this error. Much appreciated. Okay, let's continue with today's session. In the last chapter, Lola and Park were at last united, and it appears that Lola has a plan to address some of the problems in her life. In this chapter, we're going to follow the first steps of this plan. Listen carefully.
The Adventures of Lola Badiola, Chapter 53. Rush. Lola was now a force of nature, a tornado sweeping any obstacle aside. She hurried into the living room where Concha and Eugenio were having a heated argument. "I'm going to borrow your guest. I'll bring him back this evening." Neither of her friends paid any attention to her. Concha was on the attack. She suspected her husband of the worst. She demanded to know everything about his double life. Eugenio was doing his best to placate her, but he looked like a man on the way to the guillotine. Lola didn't have time to intervene in the domestic dispute. She was certain that once everything was out in the open, the couple would reconcile their differences. She grabbed Park and dragged him out of the apartment. They didn't wait for the elevator. Instead, they hurried down the winding wooden stairs. Lola had to catch her companion a couple of times to prevent him from falling face first down the stairwell. They reached the exit of the building and ran around the corner to the main road. It was lunchtime, so there was a lot of competition for the cabs heading down Fuencarral. One stopped about 20 metres away to pick up an overweight couple wearing baggy jeans and sneakers, most likely American tourists on their way to the Prado. Lola grabbed Park's hand, ran towards the cab and pushed the couple out of the way. "Welcome to Madrid," she said, as she jumped into the back seat. "Better for them if they walk, you know what I mean?" she said to the cab driver, a typical madrileño. Lola gave him the address of the Texpania headquarters and offered him a 50-euro tip if he arrived there before 3 p.m. This focused his mind, and he accelerated away from the scene without any further comments. Lola took out her mobile and called Diego. She got straight to the point. "Hey, Lola? You don't want JJ to sell the company, do you?" "What? It was obvious at dinner last night." "What are you talking about? I don't have time to explain right now. Just listen carefully. I need you to meet me at the headquarters of Texpania in 30 minutes. If you leave now and travel on your Vespa, you'll get there in time. You need to bring a laptop, the most powerful one that we have, and a standard contract for signing. You got that?" "What's going on, Lola?" "See you at the entrance to Texpania headquarters in 30 minutes. Lola hung up the phone and then immediately scrolled through her contact list until she reached the name of Gonzalo Garrido. She clicked on his number. "Gonzalo, whatever you're doing right now, you need to drop it." "Lola?" "I need you to prepare me the following legal document, a confirmation that Texpania agrees to drop all pending and future lawsuits against me related to any cybersecurity breaches of their company, their clients and affiliates." "What are you talking about?" "I need you to do that right now and then meet me at Texpania headquarters in 30 minutes. "Lola, are you crazy?" "Never been saner in my life. I'll see you in 30 minutes. Then she hung up the phone and turned to the skinny little man sitting next to her. "Now, Pluto, tell me everything you know about Texpania." As the taxi weaved frantically in and out of traffic on the M30 ring road, Park explained the weakness he had exploited in the software that controlled the company's electrical infrastructure. He told her how he was able to access the automatic transfer switch that determined whether the power entering the headquarters came from the electrical grid or from its own internal generators. He explained that he was able to trick the system into believing that there had been an external power cut, thus triggering the internal power generators to switch on and cause an electrical overload. Most machines, from desktop computers to the company elevators, would temporarily cease to function until the building management understood the problem and rebooted the system. Lola listened carefully, asking questions about how Park had discovered the vulnerabilities, what TechSpania had done to patch them, and whether he still believed these weaknesses existed. By the time they arrived at the headquarters, her plan was taking shape. She got out of the taxi and looked up at the gleaming tower of steel and glass in front of her. Somewhere at the top of the building, JJ was in a meeting room finalising the terms of a deal. Lola needed to get into that room before the deal was signed. She heard the sound of a Vespa's straining engine in the distance and spotted Diego arriving with a leather bag wrapped around his massive torso. He parked his bike on the pavement and strode over to where they were standing, his face flushed with tension. "I brought the laptop and contract. Now, could you please tell me what the hell is going on? I almost killed myself 3 times on the way over here." "This is Pluto," said Lola, introducing the little man standing next to her. "Hi, nice to meet you," Diego replied, offering his huge, hairy hand to the stranger, too distracted by the drama to register the man's name. Park didn't move a muscle. He'd never met anyone like Diego before, more mythical creature than human being, half man, half bear. Lola repeated herself, this time with a little extra emphasis. "This is Pluto." Diego looked at Park, and then back to Lola, and then back to Park. And finally, the penny dropped. "You're kidding me. You are fucking kidding me. How did you find him?" "Doesn't matter. The point is, he's now on our side." Diego instantly understood the significance of the situation. Not only would they no longer have to worry about the threat of this unknown hacker, but also they could learn from his skills and expertise. "So, what's the plan?" "Give Pluto the laptop, and have the standard contract ready for me when I ask for it. We're going to gatecrash JJ's party and change the music." "Understood." Diego reached into his satchel and pulled out the laptop and handed it over to Park. The North Korean programmer had never used or even touched a portable computer before. Everything he did in the cybercrime department was on a Chinese desktop. He took the machine like a classical guitar prodigy might take a brand new Fender Stratocaster. He caressed its silky body, then opened it up and ran his fingers delicately across the robust plastic keys. An expression of awe once again beamed from his face. "Hey, what's going on?" A taxi had just pulled up outside the entrance of the building, and a man was striding towards the three of them.
"Gonzalo!"
Lola ran up to him, and in her nervous excitement wrapped her arms around him in an enthusiastic embrace. Then she introduced him to the other 2 men.
"Do you have the legal document?" she asked breathlessly.
"Yeah, just a 1-pager. It's basic, but it's binding."
"Great."
Lola took a deep breath. She now had everything that she needed to carry out her plan. But first, she had to get them all past security and into the boardroom on the 51st floor of the building.
"Okay, guys, follow me."
And without any further discussion, she led her 3 warriors, a Harvard-educated lawyer, a bear-like technology manager, and a North Korean defector, into the headquarters of TechSpania. Into the house of Mario Ruiz de Belasco, deep into enemy territory.
Lola has assembled her dream team. It's not exactly Lord of the Rings or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it is a combination of people that have the potential to make an impact in this situation. What exactly are they going to do? We will find out in the next few chapters. But right now, let's do some business English. And we'll start off with this common mistake.
Lola was now a force of nature, a tornado sweeping any obstacle aside. She hurried into the living room where Concha and Eugenio were having a heated argument.
"I'm going to borrow your guest. I'll bring him back this evening."
Do you know the difference between borrow and lend? Do you always use these two verbs appropriately? Non-native speakers often get confused, so let's explain how each of these verbs work in detail. To borrow is to receive money or something tangible from somebody with a plan to repay them in the future. It is a verb that is often followed by the preposition from. For example, in the present simple, you might say, "Could I borrow this pen from you?" And in the past simple, "I borrowed $20,000 from the bank to buy a car." When you borrow, you get something, you receive something. Now, in contrast to that, when you lend, you give money, or you give something tangible to somebody with the assumption that it will be paid back at some point in the future. It is a verb that is often, but not always, followed by the preposition to. For example, in the present simple, "I never lend money to my brother." In the past simple, "I lent my car to my cousin and he crashed it." It gets confusing because the act of borrowing occurs simultaneously with the act of lending. So, for example, a mortgage is money that I borrow from the bank to buy a house. It is also money that the bank lends to me in order to buy that house. So there you go. I'm sure you're pretty comfortable with the theory and this explanation, but let's make sure you have an instinctive grasp of this important piece of business vocabulary. Here are three sentences, and you have to decide if we use the verb to borrow or the verb to lend. So here's the first sentence. "When will you return the money I lent you?" Or, "When will you return the money I borrowed you?" Well, in this case, it's sentence number one. I am lending you money. I am lending money to you, and I am asking you when you're going to give it back to me. Okay, here's the second set of sentences. "Last year, we lent 100,000 euros to Santander to buy our house." Or, "Last year, we borrowed 100,000 euros from Santander to buy our house." Well, in this case, it's option number two. "Last year, we borrowed." That's what happens when you take out a mortgage. You are borrowing money from the bank in order to buy your house. And then over the years, you pay it back, plus interest. Okay, here's our third and final example. "The company issued a bond in order to lend money to its investors." Or, "The company issued a bond in order to borrow money from its investors." Well, in this case, it's option number two. The company is borrowing money from the financial markets. And one of the ways a company can borrow from the financial markets is to issue a corporate bond. This is an IOU. It raises money from the financial markets. It pays a certain interest on that money over a number of years. And then eventually, when the bond reaches maturity, the company pays the money back to the investors and probably refinances. In other words, issues another bond and borrows more money. So how did you do in this little quiz? Are you 100% confident? If so, let's move on to some technology vocabulary. Listen to this sentence again.
He explained that he was able to trick the system into believing that there had been an external power cut, thus triggering the internal power generators to switch on and cause an electrical overload, Most machines, from desktop computers to the company elevators, would temporarily cease to function until the building management understood the problem and rebooted the system.
To reboot is to reload the operating system of a computer, to start it up again. Now, booting is simply starting a computer's operating system. So rebooting, logically, is to start it again. And rebooting usually is necessary after a computer crashes, allowing you to restart and get back to working normally. Now, interestingly, this term has been extended to be used in other situations that involve a new beginning, particularly after a period of difficulty. You might say that you are trying to reboot your career after you recently got fired, or that a film series is about to be rebooted by a new director with a new storyline, image, and vision. This is what happened to Batman when the British film director Christopher Nolan took charge. He made the series darker, more deeply psychological, and more adult than its previous incarnations. It is said that he rebooted the Batman franchise. Okay, here's our next technological word.
Lola listened carefully, asking questions about how Park had discovered the vulnerabilities, what Tech Spania had done to patch them, and whether he still believed these weaknesses existed.
To patch means to fix or to cover a damaged area or a weak spot. So when you're a kid and you fall over in the playground and you cut your knee, the school nurse will patch you up and then send you back into the playground. It's a term that is often used in computer programming. To patch is to apply a set of changes to a computer program designed to update it, or to fix it, or to improve it in some way. This includes fixing security vulnerabilities or other problems known as bugs. Okay, here's the next item of vocabulary.
Give Pluto the laptop and have the standard contract ready for me when I ask for it. We're going to gatecrash JJ's party and change the music.
Have you ever gatecrashed a party? Have you ever gatecrashed a wedding? To gatecrash is to arrive uninvited to a party and attempt to mix with everyone else, as if you were meant to be there. There are people who are very good at gatecrashing high-profile social events. For example, they will find out which celebrities are attending the events, and then they will dress up and pretend to be those celebrities in order to get into the party. One of my favorite movies is called Working Girl, made in the 1980s. It stars Melanie Griffiths and Harrison Ford. And it's the story of this very smart, working-class woman who has an instinctive understanding of business. And she comes up with an idea for a very lucrative business transaction. But she needs to speak to the CEO of one of those companies to convince him to consider her idea. And the only way she can do this is by gate crashing the wedding of his daughter, which she does with style, courage, and humor. Working Girl, it's a great film about business and romance. If you haven't seen it already, I'm sure you'll be able to find it on one of the streaming channels. It's a film with Melanie Griffiths, Harrison Ford, and it's well worth a couple of hours of your time. I saw the film again recently, and as I was watching it, I realized that it has loosely inspired some of the ideas and the events in The Adventures of Lola Badiola. So if you find this story interesting, I'm sure you will really enjoy watching the film. Okay, here's our last item of vocabulary. Listen to this again.
Do you have the legal document? She asked breathlessly.
Yeah, just a one-pager. It's basic, but it's binding.
Binding comes from the verb to bind, to tie something or someone tightly to something else, to fasten something so it can't get away, it can't escape. So when we talk about a binding contract, it's an agreement that you can't escape from. It's legally enforceable. It means that if you don't fulfill your end of the bargain, the other party can take you to court. They can sue you. There are also non-binding contracts, and these are typically used when the two parties want to write just preliminary discussions on paper, preliminary agreements, to make sure there's a general understanding before they finalize the terms of a binding contract. Okay, now let's cover a really interesting grammar point. It's called question tags. Have a listen to this sentence again.
You don't want JJ to sell the company, do you?
Question tags are a way of confirming something that you already believe. When Lola says, "You don't want JJ to sell the company, do you?" She's not asking a normal open-minded question. She believes that Diego does not want JJ to sell the company, and she's using the question tag to confirm that. She's not 100% sure. She's maybe 90% sure. And that's why she frames the question in this way. Now, a simple way of saying this sentence would be, "You don't want JJ to sell the company, right?" Many people use the word "right" in an informal way because it's so much simpler than a question tag, which can be quite confusing. Let me explain how question tags work. The general rule is that you reverse the pronoun and verb, and you change the positive affirmative to a negative interrogative, and a negative affirmative into a positive interrogative, and wherever possible, you contract. You got that? Okay, it's much easier to see with an example. So a standard question where you really don't have any assumptions about the potential answer would be, "Are you going to the conference?" Now, if you believe that someone is going to the conference and you want to double check to confirm this fact, you might say informally, "You are going to the conference, right?" If you want to sound more native and more formal, you would replace the word "right" with the appropriate question tag. In this case, "You're going to the conference, aren't you?" If, on the other hand, you believe that the person is not going to the conference, then you would phrase the question this way. "You're not going to the conference, are you?" A negative statement is followed by a positive interrogative question tag. "You're not going to the conference, are you?" A positive statement is followed by a negative interrogative question tag. "You are going to the conference, aren't you?" Now, in these examples, we have used the verb to be. With all other verbs, other than the verb to be, the question tag takes the auxiliary verb. "You like working remotely, don't you?" "You don't like living in the city, do you?" Okay, let's have a little interactive exercise. I am going to start the sentence, and you have to end it with the appropriate question tag. I'll pause for 3 seconds before I give you the answer. Are you ready to play the game? Okay, here we go. "He isn't American, is he?" "You have a car, don't you? You've been to the headquarters already, haven't you? We should go to the meeting, shouldn't we? And finally, I'm not in love, am I? Okay, how did you do? If you hesitated or made any mistakes, just rewind this podcast and do the exercise again. Actually, you wouldn't rewind a podcast, would you? In the era of digital audio devices, I suppose you scroll backwards or slide back and do the exercise again. Okay, finally, we have a couple of common expressions for you. Here's the first one.
Lola took out her mobile and called Diego. She got straight to the point.
To get straight to the point is a very common business expression. It's something that we hope that everybody does when we're at meetings or presentations. We hope that they will tell us exactly what they want or what they mean as clearly as possible without unnecessary information. To get to the point means to communicate without wasting any time. Okay, finally, here's a British English idiom that is often used by native speakers. Listen carefully.
This is Pluto. Diego looked at Park, and then back to Lola, and then back to Park. And finally, the penny dropped.
The expression, the penny dropped, is used to indicate that someone has finally realized something. They have suddenly understood the truth. And the phrase became popular in the 1930s. The connection is with mechanical machines that required a penny to operate. For example, buying a drink or buying a newspaper from a machine in the street. A penny was the most common coin or form of money back in the old days. And sometimes the coin would get stuck, and you'd have to wait for the penny to drop for the machine to work. So when a penny drops, things, for example, our brains, suddenly start working. And this is what happens to Diego at this point in our story. And on that note, we come to the end of today's session. If you'd like to join us for more formal classes with Marina and me, please sign up to Club Grattan. You can find a link in the description of this chapter on your podcast platform. We hope that you will join us for the next episode of The Adventures of Lola Badiola. Until then, keep bringing English into your life and remember the words spoken to Hamlet, the subject of one of the greatest tragedies ever written. Never a borrower nor a lender be, for loan oft loses self and friends, and borrowing dulls the edge of husbandry. Don't worry, most native English speakers don't understand Shakespeare either. What he's basically saying here is, avoid debt.